Be good.
Hello there, pals. Thanks for tuning in to the Monkey Tooth Podcast. This is Andrew. With my wife, Tiffany, and our little dog, Pele, we're traveling all over the place. Started in California, went up to Alaska, and are now making our way south. We're currently in Colorado, on our way to Argentina, ultimately down to the bottom of South America over the next couple of years to meet people doing fun and interesting things, and to have conversations like the one that I'm about to share with you today with a couple of folks, Joe, Bob, and Amanda. I'll tell you about them in a second. But before we get there, before I do anything else, I gotta share something with you because this meant quite a bit to me. We've gotten some nice letters from people. It's wonderful to get letters, or emails rather, from people who listen to the show. But this is a weird thing to do, ride around and ask dumb questions and put these things up, and we're just sharing a lot of personal information. And sometimes I have my doubts, I'll put it that way. But this was nice. This is a letter from a lady named Camilla, and I've asked her if this was okay. She said it was okay. Camilla is, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Camilla, is from Poland. She says, "Hi, my name is Camilla, and I'm from Poland. I discovered your podcast when listening to Chris Ryan's Tangentially Speaking, which I love. You have a very nice energy. I really like what you are doing. I find it interesting and entertaining. I'm also a vivid traveler and was listening to your podcast from Fairbanks while on a trip in Azerbaijan and Georgia. Very interesting. Thank you so much for what you are doing, and don't stop. Bye from Poland." That touched my heart. It made Tiffany and I very happy to hear that, read that, and we just appreciate the hell out of it. So thank you, Camilla. We will keep on doing this, and I'm glad you're out there, glad you're listening, and thank you for letting me know that you're enjoying this. Okay, so what are you enjoying? Well, stuff like you're about to hear, I hope, is what you're enjoying. Joe Bob Merritt and Amanda Sage are some pretty special people. They are artists and just doers. These people were so kind. We showed up on, you know, in the morning, just wanting to hang out with them and get them on the podcast. And we met them in Gunnison, Colorado, which is absolutely a stunning, gorgeous place that you absolutely have to check out. But they have this compound down on South Main in Gunnison that is just, it's so cool. There's so many different things going on. They're going to tell you all about it in the podcast, but they're just engaged and very, very thoughtful and very intentional with what they're doing. And they were busy when we showed up. They had family coming into town, and the next day they were going to a little town called Crested Butte for this festival called Vinatuck, which was awesome. We went there and joined Amanda and Joe Bob, and Joe Bob is a sculptor among his many artistic talents, and he built this effigy called the Grump, which is burned every year at Vinatuck. And we talk a little bit about Vinatuck Festival, which was, like I said, it was pretty special. But anyhow, he had a lot going on. Joe Bob was not just sitting around enjoying a beautiful day. He was doing stuff. And they took the time to talk to Tiffany and I and made us feel completely welcome. They let Pele run around in their garden and check stuff out. And we had a great, great conversation that I feel privileged, genuinely privileged to share with you right now. I really, really hope you like it. And I hope you check out all the stuff that they are about. I put up a ton of links on the website, mtp.dog. You can just click on listen to the podcast. You'll see their episode up with the songs that we used in this, and every link that we talked about. We talked about a movie. I put that link in there. We talked about what they're building. There's links to their sites. Amanda's got a beautiful clothing line. She makes amazing art. They both make amazing stuff. So definitely, definitely check them out. And there's links to their social media and all that sort of stuff. So that's all I'm going to say. I'm going to get cracking with this thing and to say thank you to all the people out there who are listening. And let us know what you think. Send us a note, mtp.dog/contact. Tell us what you're thinking. All right, guys, have a good time. Do fun and interesting things. Bye-bye.
My name is Joe Bob Merritt, and I am an architect. An art-ctect.
Okay.
And I found my way to the Gunnison Valley as a child, and as a young adult, I decided to stake my ground here. And I've been here for 21 years now, here in Gunnison. And we are currently at South Main Gunnison, which could be referred to as a station on the Peace Train. And Amanda will speak more about trains, and I'm going to talk right now a little bit about train stations.
Okay.
So South Main Gunnison is a station on the Peace Train, and we also call it an industrial park for good. So what we do here is we cultivate culture and we manufacture goodness. And South Main is composed of numerous activities, including a somatic art studio, a material art workshop called Blue Thunder Circle Artifactory. We have a salvage yard called Salvage and Such, where we collect useful building materials and architectural artifacts, and we use those to make upcycled, real, durable, hard goods. We call them Star House goods and Seed Temple goods. And these are basically furnishings for freaks of nature. We host a nonprofit here called Mountain Roots Food Project that aggregates local crops and distributes in a CSA, which is a community-supported agriculture. And we have a vision to build a small hostel here and a community kitchen called Thrive Community Kitchens that would support local food makers in their endeavors. Yeah, so those are all the components of a Peace Train station.
Yeah.
Those are all the components of a cultural cultivator. So we have activities here that help people to embody. We have activities here that help people to learn and appreciate the material arts. And we have activities here that support and encourage local food systems.
Yeah. Worthy goal. And it seems like it's happening. I mean, this isn't like you're talking about something that's coming in the future. We're sitting in the present, and it feels like all of that is right here. I mean,
yes.
Maybe not the hostel yet, but it feels like just about all of it is already present.
It's happening, yes. And as with all things that happen, they begin in the realm of vision. And this began in a vision that was called the Architecture of Remembrance. Mm-hmm. And the Architecture of Remembrance is about designing and building relationships. And I define relationships as vessels which transport the quality of connectedness and facilitate the experience of remembering, which means to come again, to gather together again.
Yeah.
So it's quite easy to have a vision. We are envisioning things all the time. Mm-hmm. Then comes the work of planning and execution. Mm-hmm. And this project has been in a constant state of planning and execution simultaneously. So it's been a very organic build. You know, 3 steps forward, 4 steps back, 10 yeah. steps forward, 1 step back. You never know. But the current form that it is in is beginning to stabilize. We have become a fixture in the community, and we've become a inspiration to not only the town of Gunnison, but the county of Gunnison, and to the region of Western Slope, Colorado. We are becoming more and more known as people that are manifesting a common vision that has to do with the recollection of culture worth living in.
Yeah. I definitely want to come back to that in a moment, because memory is, it's a big, well, I mean, it's a big part of everyone's life. I think it's mostly what we are, is a collection of memories. So I want to come back to that in just a second. But also, we've not heard your sweet voice yet on this podcast. old, strong and silent over there. Yeah, más fuerte. So Amanda, what's going on with this train? Tell me all about it.
Hi.
Hi.
So, well, trains, it's one of my favorite subjects. It's a metaphor, and it's also a very real thing to me, as trains are big and strong and have tracks everywhere and have also built the world that we live in today, that sometimes I find myself cursing at all the stuff and all the, you know, it's like this extensive materialistic world that we seem to live in. It's been refreshing to meet Joe Bob, who, you know, over the years has been teaching me how we need to reclaim that word and become true materialists again. And so in many ways, the train is it's a symbolic vessel that can carry all the good back on the tracks on a journey of remembrance and of regeneration and reverence for the human spirit. And so it's a symbol that is in all of my paintings. One of my largest contributions and how people know me is through my artwork, mm-hmm. and also through my community work, I guess, doing workshops and also my participation in various cultural cultivators around mm-hmm. the planet, this being one of them, this area. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I find myself in a lineage of visionary artists, and that is a very large term that I find also borders onto so many different ways of expressing, not just in artifacts, but in culture. Mm-hmm. And that's really what I'm most interested in. And so every day is a new day that brings new awesome surprises and opportunities for growth and shift. And so it really isn't about creating that final piece or that
sure.
or that end piece. It's so much about creating the constant work, which yeah. is always unfolding. And I see that in my own paintings. They teach me that, as well as this project here at mm-hmm. South Main Gunnison, and any projects that I'm involved in that have cultural malleability. Yeah. I don't know if that's a word. But we have to always be pressing the restart button in some ways and show up to class and with a fresh perspective and a dedicated heart.
Mm-hmm.
And good things happen then, you know? It continues to unfold. I feel like the path is it's magical. And that's why I'm still here, I guess, doing what I'm doing. Because it keeps becoming more awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the metaphor of the train. And I guess it seems like it's more than metaphorical to you and to this project. But I noticed in your work immediately that there were little trains in the background and all these little things kind of weaving through. I think of a train, it looks like this old world thing, something that we've forgotten, but it's still the most efficient means of transporting our less than valuable material goods that we're currently sort of saddled with. You know, this kind of world of fatuous bulk that we're all sifting through, and we've driven all over the country at this point, and just, I mean, every town has the same series of shitty stores that carry the same garbage, but all of it was brought at some point on a train.
Yeah.
It was shipped from God knows what country and put on a train and then put on trucks and then brought in. So a train really is, for all the weird things that it's currently doing, it is one of the most efficient ways to get our shit around. So if we can start filling those trains with things that are valuable and not fatuous and not disposable, I really like that. So it seems like that's kind of what you guys are doing, making things that are worth having, archival, pass them down, and remember them in the future and use those artifacts to remember a better past. Am I getting it? Am I coming close?
You got it.
Okay, good.
It's very much, too, about becoming more aware. So it's making things that matter and that last, but also becoming more aware of where we are.
Mm.
You know, and I think the train has the power to do that.
Yeah.
And whenever I hear a train whistle out in the world, or I see one, to me it's a recognition trigger, you know, of also remembering the vision. And you know Cat Stevens' song, The Peace Train?
I can't picture it. I love Cat Stevens, but I can't.
Cat Stevens' Peace Train.
I love
that song.
Do
it? Peace Train. Oh man, I wish I could sing it. I'm not much of a singer.
Right on the Peace Train.
Right on the Peace Train.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't just.
I love Peace Train. Well, I grew up with it as like a, you know, pack your bags and Tiffany, bring your good friends too.
Tiffany remembers the song. Are you ready to sing it on air? No.
What is it? Peace Train coming
louder
or something.
Yep. Peace Train's coming louder. But it's, to me, it's talking about prophecy. It's a metaphor. It's a story that is tangled in culture all over the world. I feel like the migration of culture.
Yeah,
you know, so I see, and this links into Burning Man actually.
Yeah, that's another thing I want to ask you guys about. We'll get there,
because I see the train leaving from Burning Man.
On the edge of darkness there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. About the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, peace train sounding louder.
Ride on the peace train. Ooh, ooh. Ride, ride, ride.
Come on, the peace train. It's peace train, holy roller.
Everyone jump up on the peace train.
Well, the thing is the train is also, it's multidimensional, really. Mm. When we talk about like life in general,
right,
we're not living in a one-dimensional plane,
right,
or a two-dimensional plane, or all of these planes are existing, but we are in a lot of parallel realities are happening at the same time, or so it seems to me. So I see the train as being something that is happening already, and it's happening everywhere. It's kind of like mushrooms and mycelium.
Yeah.
I listened to a really great podcast, Joe Rogan with Paul Stamets, last night.
Incredible. Yeah.
Paul Stamets. Oh, God. Guys, learn about your mushrooms.
Yes,
gotta start eating that lion's mane and reishi and
exactly.
Chaga.
Yeah. We just saw a preview for a really incredible movie that's connected very closely to Paul Stamets. Fabulous Fungi or something like that. I really hate that I'm butchering that. But it's a story. It's a great primer for anybody who maybe hasn't heard that podcast but is really interested or should be interested in mushrooms, about that the weave of interconnectedness that binds everything. And it's all the mycelium. It's all fungus just living underneath and on top of and inside of every single living thing. So if you're on like some sort of fungus train, you're on the right track.
It's for sure a fungus train.
You could say the tracks of the, or the all the underground mycelium that are, you know, if you look out onto the landscape, you don't see the mushroom until the right time.
Right.
And then they all bloom forth, all the fruits. Mm-hmm. So in a way, the train is in motion. It's happening. As it fruits, we're going to see more and more train stations pop up like the mushrooms.
Yeah. It almost feels like the way that a mushroom relates to the mycelium below it is the way a human vessel relates to the field of consciousness that expresses itself through a person. Mm. Like the mycelium expresses through the fruiting body, spreads out, creates more opportunity for the mycelium to do the same thing again. Same with people. There's this field of consciousness that we're all privy to in some way, shape, or form that popped us up like a little mushroom, and we spread our whatever it is that we're going to be spreading, and then fold back into it. We do.
Yeah.
If all goes well.
That's a beautiful way to think about it.
I just made it up. I hope that makes it onto my gravestone. No, I'm just kidding. I do want to actually talk to you guys about more esoteric and weird stuff, because I feel like a lot of what inspires, or it seems to me anyhow, a lot of what has inspired the work that you two are doing is likely mystical experiences and things. You've referred to it as a vision. Visions don't necessarily have to come from a mystical experience, from some other thing, whether it's ayahuasca or mushrooms, but just from inner questing, inner thought, inner searching. But before we get to that, I do want to talk to you a little bit more about, so you have a deep Burning Man connection. That I understand the Vinatuk and the burning of the grump is I don't know how related it is to Burning Man or what the link is there. Do you mind educating me?
Sure. Some 34 years ago, Crested Butte, Colorado was a turning into a ghost town, and there was a population of miners there that were old Yugoslavian, Czechoslovakian, Ukrainian people, and they were the old timers. Mm-hmm. And many of them sat around on the benches in front of Tony's Conoco and noticing along coming the refugees of the late 60s looking for the end of the road. So all these hippies were showing up in town, and there was a bit of cultural conflict there. One of these hippies, her name Marcy Tellender, and she began to listen to the stories of these old timers, and they began to tell her about Vinatuk and the burning of the grump. And this is a very ancient way of banishing grievances that was performed all throughout Eastern Europe. Hundreds and hundreds, perhaps thousands of years old. Hmm. So Marcy was, in her intelligence, decided we should do this again. And so she got these old timers and these newcomers all together, and they made feasts of lamb and ciders and all of the bounty of the fall harvest. And they came together again, and they burnt the grump. And as it's told, Larry Harvey and a few of his friends were there at that first burning of the grump. Larry Harvey is the individual that is sort of blamed for the invention of Burning Man.
Okay.
An incredible human being who just passed away last year. So Larry and some of his friends were here, and they were friends with Marcy Tellender, who had migrated from San Francisco to Crested Butte. Mm-hmm. And then the following year, Larry built the first man on Baker Beach in San Francisco. So apparently there was some inspiration that came from this recollection of Vinnetok that was inspired by these old timers, these old time Eastern European miners.
Wow. That's an interesting connection. It's not what you would, I would not have immediately associated old world Europe with Burning Man.
Yeah, that's the roots of it. Wow. Is the burning of the Wicker Man or the burning of the Grump. It's quite easy to find the roots if you know where to look.
Yeah. And if you are keen to search it out, I was sharing with Amanda, I'm averse to crowds. And Burning Man, the moment it came onto my radar, immediately slid right off because it just seemed like too many people. And everyone I've ever said that to that's been there was like, oh, no, you got it all wrong because it's a different sort of thing. They're all spread out and there's no centralized thing that you have to do. It's not like a normal festival where you're going to stage B to hear so-and-so and this. There's just weird shit in every direction. Can you, I mean, I know it's not either of your jobs to promote Burning Man. I don't think it needs any promotion, but the bits of it that I'm missing, and for someone that I'm sure there are plenty of people like me who are just would not go just because it's too many people, you know, is there anything other than don't worry about all the people that you would want to tell anybody?
Man, it's this was my 10th year.
Wow.
And I have to be honest, I was trying not to go.
Okay.
But it's too powerful of a gathering currently also for the work and the things that I'm interested in to not go. And you can go in so many different ways. It's about 70, 80,000 people now. And it's very large in terms of like the scope of it. And I think that's one of the things that people that have never been, it's one of the first things that they say when they get there. They're like, oh my God, I had no idea it was this big. And the thing is it's not as concentrated as you might think. It's very spread out. And it feels very much like a village too. It has a very deep neighborhood vibe within the city. And then you go out into the playa and you find art projects everywhere and art cars.
Yeah.
And it varies so greatly, I think, each person's experience. And yeah, it's something that I don't think can happen in that way maybe anywhere else because of the nature of the desert and right. bringing everything there that is to be there for a temporary time and then brought away again. It's an experience of coming into a world that is never, that is fresh in a sense. Like it's hostile. I mean, it's not, there's no plants growing there, yeah. right? And they tell you, please don't bring any plants because it's a leave no trace event too,
right.
which is a big contradiction because there's so much also waste that comes out of Burning Man because of the nature of yeah. it. You know, we bring everything out there and then we got to take it all out again. But it gives you a much deeper window into what it is we actually need to survive or what we think we need to survive.
Yeah.
So people overplan a lot, you know, because you're going out there like, I don't know what I'm going to do without what I'm used to,
yeah.
you know? and I think everybody that goes in some way leaves transformed. Even though there's a lot of hard knocks on it for being like, you know, just a big party. I mean, I think partying is very important.
Yeah, anybody's knocking parties, fuck them. Yeah,
like, it's fine. Speaking of the party.
Yeah, there we
it
go.
Gets going here about 12 noon
nice.
Every day.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're giving people a hard time for partying, you're not, no one's listening to you anyway.
But I mean, I think it's a big critique, though. Currently, at least for me, I'm beyond wanting to just continue partying because I see the environment and I see the world that we're in currently, and we need to become active in our participation
yeah.
for shifting some of the practices that are being done on the planet now,
right.
and waking up to other ways because. The environment is the one thing that is really shouting at us, more than ever. I mean, go to any beach, you know, and you'll find the, you know, just the remnants, all the trash, and the reefs are dying. And I mean, the list is long, and it can't be denied.
No,
cannot. Nobody can. So that's one thing we really need to band together and use art, use all of our creativity to be working towards that. And so there's a great contradiction for me in going to Burning Man.
Right. Very energy intensive sort of thing to get everyone there and all the waste and all that sort of thing.
But what happens there are the meetings that come together through the characters that are drawn to be there, mm-hmm. that turns into great projects that happen outside of that. That are all over the world.
What's the desired outcome of Burning Man?
Well, I personally could... I can't speak for the org. I don't really know what they're up to relative to that question. I don't know. I can speak, though, to the effect that they're... endeavors have had on me. So to go out to a place where there is nothing and build a community that is full of meaning and to witness the material exposition, to see the all of the extraordinary flowering expressions of humanity in full exploding display does two things. It leaves one with a sense of awe, and it also leaves one with a sense of disgust. So it all happens kind of all at once. So Burning Man has inspired me to, one, be more extravagant, more beautiful, more accepting, more loving, and it's also has inspired me to be more conservative, more respectful, and more conscious of what it is that I'm burning. They don't call it Burning Man for nothing. It's beautiful to watch the burn. And it also leaves one with a profound sense of grief for all that we're burning. Now, I don't know if the org has that same perspective, because I'm not deep in the org. But that's been my experience.
Come on in.
Can I add to that?
Yes, please.
So one of the things that inspires me the most currently about Burning Man is the work that the Burners Without Borders is doing. And this goes beyond the borders of Burning Man. And that's very much, I feel like, what I'm interested in, is what happens in all the weeks and days beyond that nexus gathering of Burning Man in the desert. Mm-hmm. And what it Burning Man has done is created new relations in many ways. It's created new communities and new culture that is all over the world now. And that is also being fueled in many ways through the connection that we have of the internet, you know, of being able to find each other and share resources. And what Burners Without Borders is doing is helping out communities. And also they did one of the biggest relief efforts during Hurricane Katrina. A whole bunch of people went there straight from Burning Man. They were first responders. They were there before the government was there.
Wow, you never hear about that.
Yeah. So there's things, and there's also a lot of incredible things that have been built that are functional, say, like kitchens built out of containers. Mm-hmm. They can be packed up and then put on a train or put on a bus, mm-hmm. or, I mean, on a flatbed, you know, and taken where it's needed. And this is where I see, you know, it going.
Yeah.
And that there be more people that are come together looking for a community, looking for something that they can believe in, feel passionate about, and then bring that back into their communities. And I feel like that's also reflects a lot of what Vinatalk is about here too, because Vinatalk is also in some ways it's inclusive, but it's exclusive, as Burning Man is. Burning Man is a radically inclusive, but it's also become so exclusive because tickets are so hard to get, right? And then here in Vinatalk, this is a community-based festival where there are no tickets sold. It's not a festival that you go and like that there's advertisement for. This is something that you participate in. And especially if you live here. So it's more of an invitation. Vinatalk is an invitation for communities worldwide to create meaning again, to remember where they came from and who they are now, to also come together, to go forward together also, you know, to work together in a more harmonious way, which then when we share our resources, and we find that at Burning Man, we learn these things at Burning Man, that your neighbor probably has what you need if you forgot something, mm-hmm. you know? And people come together and they experience that kind of community, especially because there's no commerce there.
Right.
That is one of the biggest things, I think, to experience. That many people together where nobody's trying to sell you anything.
Right.
And you can't buy anything. And it's not even a barter society. It's a gifting society.
Right.
And that is an incredible thing to experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm feeling that. It feels pretty good. I'm still reticent to drive myself into the throngs, but I'm heartened to hear the intentionality behind it, because that's very important in everything. And it sort of brings me back around to the whole aspect of remembrance and remembering things. And this might take me a second to put all this together, but I've noticed in the very brief few moments that I've had to spend with your respective artworks, specifically the paintings, there's very much a dreamlike quality to both of your work. And your work, Joe Bob, has got this, it's got this like kind of childlike quality that I really like. It's I don't know how to quite describe it, but it's got these big figures that seem like amorphous, different types of animal, human types of things that I've noticed in a few of them that I really like, that remind me of dreams. And Amanda, your stuff, I almost feel like I need to like pour some water in my face, because it is very evocative of dream states and mystical experiences. That so dreaming to me, dreaming is very important to me. And I feel like it's that, you know, your sleep is that 20% of your life that you're not necessarily totally conscious for, and you don't always remember it unless you've had a dream, which is like whittling away at that 20%. Like you're getting a little bit back on your life. You know, you can, because all we really are a sort of sticky mat of memories. You know, everything that you do, anything you think about, any decision you make is based on what you remember. And so if you can remember something from a dream, I feel like it's almost as rich as a waking life experience. So in your goal to sort of remember, and I like the way you put it, that it's remembering things, putting things back together, through your art and through the things that you're building and making, what do you hope people are going to remember?
Everything matters. You know, many of us go through a period of our life where we, you know, have existential crises, and we say, nothing matters. And depression sets in, or anxiety around this lack of meaning. But the truth is, the fact of the matter is that everything matters. So everything is mattering. Matter is the mother, and the mother matters. That's what she does. Etymologically, mother and matter are the same words. Cross-culturally, the Holy Mother is the whole of matter, the materiality, the materiality, the reality of matter entities, maternity, the entity of materiality. This is what is real. The mother is alive and not dead. And she is mattering. And culturally, we've forgotten this. We go around and we objectify things. And we call things by their brand names. I drive a Ford F-350 truck. And that is a lie. I drive the Holy Mother in the shape of a Ford F-350 truck. So much of the works of art that I am making is a contemplation. I am being in time with this truth and facing the truth of the fact of the matter. That in order to make anything, something must be broken. So we're constantly breaking in order to be making. And in this realization, we begin to understand that that our choices of the things that we make have an effect on the both the ancestors and the children of the material that we use to make that thing.
Yeah.
So this coming again to gather together in remembrance of the truth of the fact of the matter lends one to the experience of reverence and adoration for beings that are not human. This includes animals, waters, minerals, plants. And personally, it is breaking. In other words, it is diminishing my cultural momentum that I have been indoctrinated into, the cult of commerce, right? So this idea of materiality is breaking that culture. It's stopping it. And in that stopping of it, it's opening a path towards a starting of a new way of relating, or a new way of being a contributor to the development of a culture.
Oh, you can just listen to Joe Bob talk.
Yeah. That's a lot to digest, particularly for a guy who often feels, I'm unconvinced, by anything. I might be in that existential, I hate to call it a crisis because I'm having a pretty good time, but I might be in like an existential sort of prolonged question asking, and the idea of subjective value or mattering is hard for me to get my head around. I don't know that I necessarily feel depressed, but I often feel anxious about the nature of reality and the nature of material things. I've certainly had some experiences where all of it's come into question in a big way. So to hear your, particularly your etymological grip on matter and mother and, you know, how it relates to us and whether or not it matters is independent of what I think.
Yes.
Yeah, as I think all things are independent of what it is I think I believe. But it is encouraging to hear you put it that way. And it's also a little discouraging because it sort of takes some of the wind out of my idiom of like, well, fuck, you know, nothing really matters. So I appreciate that, and fuck you for that. Almost said I lost my train of thought, but I don't even want to say that for fear of some other notion of mine being shattered in this conversation. what matters to me is what little community I can get a hold of, and I quite like solitude. That's why the idea of going to the desert and being around a bunch of fuckers is like, that's not why I go to the desert. I go to the desert to not be around anyone. But if I'm around anyone, I want it to be like my wife and my dog, maybe a couple of close friends. So what matters to me is, you know, whatever, I feel like everyone is almost already my friend and we haven't met. You know, everybody is just about to be my buddy. We just need time. And your archival work, the things you're making and building, that you want people to remember what matter is. Who your mother is, and even a lot of your art is very based on like a divine feminine energy, it seems like. Where does your community, your friends, and the people that may perceive you as an enemy or that people perceive as enemies, how does that relate to your quest to remember?
Well, I feel like it's all influencing all of it. And the community is a very large part of that, because to me, the artwork is a collaboration in many ways. Like, I don't feel like it's something that's coming just through me, you know, that I am maybe the one that's putting the brush to the canvas, but I am very much interested in the bigger picture of what we're all a part of. And so a lot of the clues come from the community, you know, and observing the surroundings. And then also having people that are, you know, responding and giving feedback. And there's all kinds of tokens of tasty morsels of thoughts and ideas and ways of looking at things that the community brings. And sometimes it's critical, you know, sometimes there can be, especially through social media, you can, you know, definitely come across people that have more criticism rather than praise.
Yeah.
And I think there's almost too much praise sometimes out there. You know, people are afraid of offending each other. Mm-hmm. But I think there's some people that only want to offend others. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's a fine line of what you pay attention to. Mm-hmm. But in general, I feel like my work is fueled by prayer, really. and of a desire to rise to my highest frequency, to be able to transmit something that will be of relevance to others, that will inspire community, that people can all over the world, you know, have access to because of the internet. We have that tool currently is something that is such a contemporary tool for community, you know, and for the art, as art being, you know, one of my friends, dear friends, the late Jim Shannon, the general of the New Earth Army, he said the artists are painting the signposts for the future. And so if art can be a tool for others to help them remember in times when things get dark and we lose our way, because we forget, we all do. We all fall into moments of forgetfulness. And we need things to help us remember the way. Mm-hmm. And it can be a friend sometimes that can say a few words. It can be a book, it can be a piece of music, it can be a walk in the woods, it can be a piece of art that can help us remember. And so I like to think that what I'm doing is contributing to that awakening in as many individuals as possible.
I like that.
Yeah.
So everything is information. Everything is in formation. The world is alive and it's not dead. We are informing form, and form informs form. And this is never ending. So to be in community is to receive information, and it is to inform. And it's good to have friends that provide that feedback. We're fed by our friends. And I'm thinking about your comment about traveling around and feeling anxious and probably sensing the, you know, like you're like a receptor of the grief of the fact of the matter. Well, I just want to encourage you that what you're doing is of great value, because you are an informant. You are investigating. You are seeking out what would be worthy of investing in. So your gift to us coming here, asking the question, allows us to hear our own answers. And in so doing, that questioning inspires us and helps us to remember what we're doing, which then builds courage in our hearts. So your gift of your journey, what I see as a type of journalism, you know, is of great value to the community. And I'm happy to meet your acquaintance and be part of this information cycle.
Very much likewise. Likewise. I want to ask, because I know our time is getting close. You both have got a lot of projects going. You have a studio in LA or a
Yeah, Amanda has a studio in downtown LA. She calls it the Watchtower.
Yeah.
And it's this funky old building that was never really finished, and it was squatted about 15 years ago, and some of the original squatters are still in there. And wow. I mean, it's a legitimate, you know, it's certified by the fire department now, but it's this funky thing in Spring Street, downtown LA. And it's a great contrary experience to Gunnison, Colorado.
I can imagine. Yeah. Yeah. So you're selling art out of there as well, or is it just the place to create?
The Watchtower is her personal painting studio. Mm-hmm. She has a vast collection of paintings just about a block up on Main Street at Peace Yoga Gallery, where the incredible Sherry Ray Russell makes the most amazing raw vegan food ever. Mm-hmm. And there's a 4,000 square foot space in the basement that is the yoga studio, as well as a gallery of Amanda's works. So many of her originals are housed there.
That's cool.
That's a great place in downtown LA to go and experience her work.
Yeah. Now, so on the other side of the country, you guys are going to New York to meet with the Grays. What's the involvement there I can never remember the name of the temple. What's
COSM? It's stands for the Chapel of Sacred Mirrors.
Chapel of Sacred Mirrors, yeah.
So Alex Gray and Allison Gray, mm-hmm. they purchased some property an hour and a half north of Manhattan in Wappingers Falls. They're building currently a museum called the Entheon, which will house Alex's paintings of the sacred mirrors and also international visionary art and the biggest collection of their work. That's hopefully going to open next year. And they also they've been hosting full moon ceremonies for about 30 years. And they also do equinox and solstice celebrations and art church on Sundays. And there's also a beautiful estate house there that can sleep, I think, up to 30 people or more. And we are going to host a painting workshop. I have a series of painting workshops that I've been doing for the past 8 years around the world. I call it Painting with Light. And it's focusing on a technique that we call the Misch technique that was passed on to me through Michael Fuchs, Ernst Fuchs, Philip Rubinoff Jacobson, and a lineage of artists that were a bit outside of the system and taught me through apprenticeship and also through workshops. And so I've been teaching this, and I think this will be the sixth or seventh year teaching at COSM. Wow. And it's a week-long intensive, and we have about 20 people that come from all over the world, and we dive deep. We eat, sleep a little bit,
yeah,
and paint, and go deep into the medicine of what it is to alchemize our visions, our dreams, into form through paint. And I find that it's what we're most lacking is our tools to explain what we're feeling and what we're seeing. And so I focus on very deep fundamentals and kind of try to make the magic more graspable,
yeah,
for the creator. Because I think all of us are artists, truly, as Joseph Beuys said. And that we're in a time where we need to realize that we are all artists, and that creativity is incredibly important for the future of survival on this planet. And so going to a workshop, even if you're not planning to become a professional artist, it will feed your soul and your work ongoing. And that's the kind of work that I aim to do. I'm not interested in just training artists to become professional gallery artists. I'm interested in people that want to create change in themselves and also through their work. And it's one of the most powerful experiences, these workshops. I feel like they are really the great work in many ways, is the community coming together to support each other in extracting their visions so that we may share them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and become inspired by them.
The storytelling to me is hugely important. I think about Helen Keller, who you're talking about helping people acquire the tools to tell their tale. Here's a woman who was, by outward appearance, imprisoned by inability to speak. I don't know that she couldn't hear, that was blind as well. And that to me, that she was able to not only rise above that and sort of transcend those, what you might see as a barrier to self-expression, and then be able to like write a book on communism and why that was a good thing. You know, to go from not knowing where the doorknob is to being able to write a book about that, that's acquiring some fundamental tools, and having the courage to sort of express that is really beautiful to me. And I, as someone who asks poorly worded questions, quasi-professionally, having a good set of tools at your disposal to tell a story is a very incredibly valuable thing that I think I can already tell you guys have all the tools necessary to tell any tale that you wanted to tell. And this leads me to, if you have time, the mystical experience, which I sense both of you are very comfortable with and have had experience. Having the tools to express what you came back from, that you said everything's information, and you went into a world of vast information and are expressing that to people in a way that like a moron like me can digest, and that is something that it seems like no matter where you are on the path to enlightenment, there's something in your work and in your art that people can get. So what tools do you think you've cultivated to be able to express what you've learned from the mystical experiences that you've had?
The most valuable tool in my toolbox is called disidentification. Joe Bob believes all sorts of things. He has opinions about everything. He's quite judgmental. He is pretty rigid in his worldview, and he thinks he's got it figured out. The tool of disidentification allows me to disidentify from Joe Bob. I can question things. I can observe. I can be free to listen. I can be open to experience. But Joe Bob can't do that, because he's coming at the world with all sorts of certainties. So it's very, very valuable to be able to separate what is real from what is unreal. And Joe Bob is not real. He's a set of opinions. And he's coming at the present with a bunch of beliefs that he acquired in the past. And the problem therein is that the present is alive. And I really don't know what's going to happen. Joe Bob thinks he knows what everything's going to happen. And I've watched him long enough to see that he's rarely correct. So this tool of disidentification allows one to, kind of step back from the sense of self-importance and to see what's going on and respond with a little bit more freedom. And that's useful in making anything, whether it's a painting or fixing an automobile or taking a road trip or taking care of a sick parent or taking care of a child, or
It seems like you've got good access to patience and humility.
Well, it wouldn't be too humble if I agreed with you.
Good answer. Damn good answer.
Love that.
But I make an effort to cultivate that, mm-hmm. and it takes work, because you know Joe Bob doesn't want to be patient, mm-hmm. right? And he doesn't want to be a human.
Yeah, that's interesting. Doesn't want to be a human.
No, he has no interest in being a human. Mm. He wants to be a perfect God who gets it right all the time and has infinite pleasure and escapes all pain.
Right.
Which...
It's not human.
It's not human.
Yeah. Interesting. How about you, kiddo? What you got?
Well, when you talk about the mystical experience, it's very individual. You know, from all the people that I've talked with, like where have we gone to seek vision? Where have we witnessed God? Where, you know, through what mediums? And everyone has a different way. You know, some do go to church. Some find it at the altar there. Some find it at the altar of the mountaintop, you know, in solitude. And I think, I'm grateful for the times that we live in, that freedom, or the place that I live in, that I have that freedom. And I have a lot of inspiration that comes through stories, that has come through a desire to be of service. And there is the people that I worked with, you know, I had an incredible experience, opportunity to work with the great artist Ernst Fuchs. And he was one of the founders of Fantastic Realism in Austria. He was born in 1930. He passed away about 4 or 5 years ago. And I worked with him for 10 years as an assistant. And he was a great mystic as well. And the way he would transmit through painting showed me that it was possible. Mm-hmm. And I had my first real psychedelic experience when I was 27. It hadn't really been around me much. I didn't really have the opportunity. There came a point where I was reading things and looking into things, and I was like, I think it's time. And so as soon as I decided that, I guess it was put into the field, and 2 weeks later I met a chemist. And this chemist was the right situation at the right time, took me on my first LSD journey, and I saw through the veil. And it wasn't anything that surprised me. It was all evoked a certain kind of memory of things that I had forgotten when I was a child, of how I saw the world. Because I could see the aura around people. I could sense their emotional state through the colors that were around them. I could see the aliveness in plants and the light around the light frequencies around them. And it was and so I had learned real classical painting. I had learned how to paint what I saw. And now I was ready to go through that and to go deeper through that. And so this, it really gave me a great tool, a great window into, and a tool to be able to go deeper. And so I don't see, I do not paint things one-to-one that I have seen in visions, right, whether they be in dreams or in a psychedelic experience. The painting is its own creature that evolves in the cooperation of my presence. And it's, you know, it's inspired though through the things that I've seen. You know, everything that I have seen or I have drawn before is in my library of content. And so when I'm standing before the canvas and I'm about to make a mark, I ask for all the things of everything that I've ever experienced and all the things that should be, could be, would be, to distill into one thing. Mm-hmm. And we start from here.
Yeah.
And from that one thing, then we move to the next. It informs the next. So I feel like I become ultra sensitive to the present. Mm. And In that state, though, mass challenge arises of distraction, mm-hmm. of doubt, of fear, sense of insecurity, of you know, can I really do this? That this doesn't really matter, actually. But the truth is that if you show up and you find ways to fight back those feelings of doubt, and you continue to raise your brush and raise your sword, spirit will work with you. And that's what I've found, you know, and I'm on that journey now. When somebody asks me, what are you painting? What are you doing? To be honest, I really don't know. And it helps me a lot to have conversation with others, because I feel like I understand deeper what I am doing. Yeah. But I feel like there is deep purpose in it, and a desire to understand and to go deeper and further than I've ever gone before. I want to see new landscapes, see new worlds, and also potentially paint things that can evoke a kind of hope and a dream for others to build on top of that. And it's all a building block, you know. And so, but the access to the realm of spirit is definitely primary tool.
Yeah.
And that tool, being able to let go, I really attribute that to the masters that I've worked with, and being able to witness them doing that. So I feel also that role, that lineage role, that I also need to pass that on. Mm-hmm. And
it's inspiring, and the two of you are a very inspiring just couple of human beings in general. Never mind all the stuff that you've accomplished. I mean, the physical building, the influence, the many things that you both do are fantastic. And I want as many people as possible to see what it is that you're doing. And for what it's worth, we'll put up every single link you want us to put up. We will tell everybody everything we can about what you're doing. Is there anything in particular you want to guide people to at the moment, or a website or a Instagram page or a thing?
Well, you can find both of us on Instagram for sure. Joe Bob Merritt Art, right? And Amanda Sage Art. And you can find us on Facebook too, if that's your preferred place.
Whatever you want to do.
Of social media. And then we do have websites, though. We're, you know, this place, South Main Gunnison, is, I mean, we stated earlier that it's in transformation constantly. Mm-hmm. We really don't have programming available currently. Yeah. But next summer, we will be doing a lot more in southmaingunnison.com or .org.
Yeah,
.com. Mm-hmm. You can find that. You can also find, I have a website, amandasage.com. But we're out there in the interwebs, and we're there to, you know, Instagram's a good place to
see what you're doing,
to interweave. And we're grateful. I'm very grateful to you and showing up and being interested. And it helps, you know, it's the artwork by itself is not, you know, it only becomes truly active when it has someone viewing it, right? And so. Yeah. So having the reflection with you guys being here and to see it through your eyes is powerful medicine for us. And we appreciate that so much.
Amen. Anything else you want to add before we sign off?
Oh, just gratitude to you and to all of your listeners for taking interest. Not only in this conversation, but interest in each and every one of them's own lives. So all the courage to all who are listening to this conversation. Keep going. Keep building the train. Keep building the train stations. And none of us are alone in this.
Soon there will be a website, too, called visiontrain.org.
Okay.
That it's a project that I've been doing, going into schools and in any different scenario. We're inviting people and children to draw their own vision in a train car.
That's great.
As within that little world of a boxcar, of a container.
Yeah.
You can put your prayer, and then we can link them all together.
That's beautiful.
And as we go, we will build the peace train. You know, as each car, you know, is linked together through couplers. They're like little hands, and they push and pull, and, you know, we're planting seeds. And anytime that you do something with intention, you know, you are magnifying your prayer. And so making a drawing. And it doesn't matter if you think you can draw. That's a big thing that for people to get over. You've got to tap into your state of non-judgment. And I tell people, well, just draw lots of bubbles or hearts or whatever comes to you. It does not matter. You know, they can be, but the act of doing something, making a mark on paper while you hold a prayer in your heart is magic. It's big magic.
I want you to tell me one more time the name of this thing that we're sitting on.
This is the Caravan of Chaos and Chance.
Caravan of Chaos and Chance. That's ideal. I wish I would have thought of that for our van. We called it, oddly enough, La Soñadora, which is the dreamer. But this is a little bit cooler. Well, thank you both so much. I wish you the very best of fortunes in the future.
And safe travels on your journey. I wish I could be a little bird on your shoulder for all the places you're going to go.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Tiffany here, saying thank you for listening to the Monkey Tooth podcast. If you haven't already, or it's been a while, check out our website, mtp.dog. There's plenty of information there. An about tab with a little bio on Andrew, myself, and our dog Pele. There's also a van build tab detailing how we did our van conversion. A journal tab, and we, as in Andrew, are doing our best to keep that up to date. And last but not least, a contact tab, where you can leave your thoughts, suggestions, or questions. You can also contact us on social media. We are on Facebook and Instagram, Monkey Tooth Podcast. If you would like to donate and or subscribe to the cause, you can go to Patreon and GoFundMe at Monkey Tooth Podcast. Patreon is not just a place to subscribe. We post lots of content there as well. We greatly appreciate each and every one of you. Love to all.